Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. ArchiCAD is the official BIM software of the Entree Architect community. ArchiCAD BIM software enables design, collaboration, visualization, and project delivery no matter the project size or complexity. With flexible licensing options and a dedicated support team to guide us along the way, ArchiCAD is an ideal choice for firms and projects of any size. I encourage you to reach out and talk to the folks at Graphisoft by visiting our own dedicated webpage at graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect. There's even an exclusive special offer waiting for our Entree Architect community. Go now to graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect and see how Graphisoft is positioned to help make your architecture firm a success. That's graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Chris Briley, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Good to be here.
Chris Briley is a principal architect at Bryburn, where he practices architecture for life, specializing in sustainable design. He's a certified passive house consultant, and he co-hosts the Green Architects Lounge podcast. He is an enthusiastic participant of the Building Science Discussion Group in Portland and a founding board member at Passive House Maine. So that's Portland, Maine that we're talking about, not the other West Coast.
We're the first Portland.
So, you're the good Portland. The first Portland.
Right. Yeah.
So that's who Chris is. Welcome, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's good to be here.
This is going to be fun. Yeah, exactly. You've been around doing this thing for a long time. The Green Architects Lounge podcast has been around a long time.
It's been around a long time, and our biggest complaint is we don't put in the episodes like a real podcast does, like yours. we go away for months at a time, and then put it up in an episode, and then go away. And we haven't really posted anything since COVID. We were just getting back into the swing of things and being regular, and then COVID hit, and the studio where we were starting to record closed. And so Phil and I haven't been back at it. But yeah, we're like old school podcasters, where we started when there were like five podcast shows out there, and you know, how many of them were doing architecture? How many of them were doing green architecture? It was a niche of a niche.
It was you.
Yeah. There weren't many. And then you came along. And so I was listening to your podcast, you know, way back in the day as well. So you've been around the block.
Yeah. So, yeah. We've been doing it before architects knew what podcasts were.
That's right. Yeah. 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 There are like people listening to your podcast now who like were like just little kids running around and now they're architects and like, oh, I'm thinking about being starting my own business in architecture. Who should I listen to? And that's just wild to think about.
Like, that is a crazy thought. Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a good show. And they're gonna be great architects, those kids.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're gonna change the world.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to know how you got started when you were a kid or whenever you discovered your passion for architecture. What inspired you to become an architect?
Oh, wow. I'm one of those kids who like always knew he wanted to be an architect by like, you know, like sophomore year in high school or whatever. So, you know, that's very annoying to people like my wife who are like, you know, she's like still trying to figure out what she wants to do, that kind of thing. Yeah. But I was always like, oh, I want to be an architect. And I don't know. I think I always wanted to do art. And then realized, oh, that's a hard life. And then I don't know, got more excited when I realized, oh, you can do sculpture that you walk through an experience, you live your life in. And, you know, that just charged me up even more. And I wasn't a good student. And then I remember my mom sitting me down and saying, you know, if you want any of these architecture schools to look at you, your grades have to, let's look at what your grades are and what they are looking for entry. Anyway, I don't have to get into that, all that stuff. But basically, I, you know, it was the desire to be an architect that actually made me a good student where yeah. I wasn't before, or I should say I was a lazy student before, but then I became a better one. And I went to Ball State College of Architecture and Planning. And for those of you from New England, it's weird. Like when I move out to Maine, you know, from the Midwest, in the Midwest, I say, yeah, I went to Ball State. Everyone knows where that is.
Right.
Out here. I say, I went to Ball State. And they're like, State. Awesome. I'm like, it's Indiana. Dave Letterman went there. Yeah, whatever. And
Jeff Eccles of architect fame. He's Ball State grad.
All right. Yep. Go Cardinals or whatever. Yep. I think it's Cardinals.
Yes. I have no idea. He would know. He's a baseball fan.
Yeah. So. Oh, okay. He would know. I missed the sports gene, as my brothers would say. I didn't get that one. They did, but I didn't. Anyway, long story short, I ended up in Maine, was working for other firms, and, you know, I eventually went out on my own. And I think, you know, somewhere in that span had that epiphany moment where I realized from the Earth's perspective or from future generations' perspectives, architects are not the good guy. You know, like if we're making a movie of protagonists, it's not architects or builders. We you know, build things, we consume materials and energy and make toxic chemicals and do all this stuff and, you know, dig up the earth and plow things over and cut down trees, yada, yada, yada. And then when you realize, oh my God, we're, you know, with climate change and all that, it's like, wow, we are the problem. And then how do you sit with that as like, oh, my career choice is, you know, right in conflict or right at this nexus of where all these things come together. And, you know, you just have to, I don't know exactly when that happened. I think it happened like really, you know, late 1990s or whatever, when I wanted to be sustainable. And that was really before climate change was as big a thing. And now, you know, carbon is, you know, upfront carbon is even, you know, the bigger issue that's fueling that whole climate change issue for architects. And yeah. And so now like, there's always this struggle in my, you know, in our office and in what we do, like we have to be the good guys. We have to have that triple bottom line where it's, you know, people, planet, and profit, you know, because I am a for-profit company or we
right.
run one, you know, don't want, but what we do, we need it to be good for the people who are experiencing the buildings and for our employees and for, you know, everyone involved. If you did good at that, great, check. If what you're doing is actually good for the planet, or at least not bad for the planet, then check. And then if you make money, check. And hey, you're a good businessman. That's easier said than done.
Yes. Well, that's actually what my next question is. So do you remember the moment where you had this firm and you realized that this is a change that you needed to make and you needed to be more focused on sustainability and start to really promote sustainability and build a brand around being a sustainable firm? Did you make that as a conscious decision? And how did you make that change?
Well, I think it started, you know, the firm I was in beforehand, we were doing a lot of stuff for Toms of Maine, which was great. And I think that's where I really had a lot of exposure to, you know, sustainability and being, you know, let loose, like, oh yeah, you know, try to be, you know, and you realize pretty quickly that there's a greener way to do everything, you know, like whatever you think right. you know, the best way to do something is, there's a more sustainable way to do it. And it's, you know, at some point it'll get crazy, but so you got to find that point where it's good and everyone buys into it and it brings value. And, you know, so I think I learned that part. And then I think when I went on my own, it really was around a particular house that I was working on with another builder. It was a spec house where, you know, housing doesn't, buildings are, you know, because they're so large, you know, like the market doesn't change rapidly for architecture, you know, like most builders out there, you know, build what sells and people buy what's offered. And there's not a lot of pushing the envelope. It's, and so like, we really wanted to push the envelope and say, yeah, we can build better. We can build more sustainably and whatever. And so I think that was the triggering piece that made me go out on my own and do that. And, but putting, you know, figuring out exactly when that was where I, you know, said, all right, I'm devoting my career to doing only, you know, sustainable stuff. And back then, you know, we're talking like 2005, whatever. And when I opened that off, that office was called Green Design Studio. Bryburn's been around since 2013. But, you know, when I named it Green Design Studio, they're like, oh my God, I, you know, all my friends and colleagues are like, are you sure you want to like hang your hat on the word, you know, on green? Like, there's, you're going to get like one project a year, you know, are you sure you want to do yeah. that? And I'm like, yeah, I'm doubling down. I'm doing it because that's what I want to do. And, but now everybody, now every firm is like, oh yeah, we do that. We do green.
Right. Yeah.
Like, really? Yeah. I mean, yeah, but do you live it? Is it, you know, part of the culture? And that's the thing, is like, we're trying to, at Bryburn, we're trying to really make sustainability part of the culture. I mean, it's like, that's what our projects are. And that's what we do. You know, we energy model everything we do. Well, not everything. I should say, we know all the new projects, we energy model some renovations, but renovations have their own beast. They, sometimes there's really no point in energy modeling the renovations if it's like in addition to a, you know, 200 year old farmhouse. It's, you know, like the part we do is going to be great, and then, you know, we'll have to deal with the rest of the house later or something, or the client will.
So you built the firm Bryburn knowing that it was going to be focused on sustainability. It's part of your brand. What are some of the specific decisions you made when you launched Bryburn to make that part of your brand, that it's clear that this is how your firm works?
Well, that's a good question. I think when that happened, you know, I was so happy to get rid of the word green, you know, the title of my firm, whatever, at the time. And then I partnered, and the reason why it's called Bryburn is that my name is Briley and my partner is Harry Hepburn. And you push those together as Bryburn. And it took us months to come up with that name or whatever. It's just crazy. All the other names we were considering. And that was actually just the name that our marketing guy, who's a friend of mine, that was just what he used to talk about us, just generically or whatever. I'm going to meet with Bryburn or whatever.
It was an abbreviation.
Yeah, it was an abbreviation. And I'm like, well, let's do that. And you know what? You Google Bryburn, you just get one. There's, you know, right, it's a unique, right, unique word.
And you got the URL.
That was a breeze.
Bryburn.com is there.
Yeah.
It was a conscious decision to not use sustainability or green in the name of the firm.
Yes. Because of the tragedy of the word green, you know, mm-hmm. it's like now, you know, everyone, there's greenwashing and every firm does green now. It's like, well, yeah, but do you, and it's meaningless because to some person, green means bamboo floors. It's like, no, that's not green. And some people it's net zero, some people it's carbon zero. So it has no metric to it. It doesn't mean anything. The word sustainable is almost the same thing. We were worried almost any other word we choose is going to suffer the same fate eventually in some way or another. We thought, all right, if we have a unique word, Bryburn, that is, you know, we get to, over the course of our career of this office, define what that is.
Right.
And so what we want that to be is like a, you know, synonymous with sustainable architecture, you know, that's the aspiration and we're working on it. And also, you know, because this is a business podcast, you know, an architecture business podcast, we can talk about, you know, like that name is like, you've got firms where we didn't want to be Briley Hepburn because I don't know. We want to also foster a culture in the office where people can help pilot the course of the office. You know, like we as the principals, you know, would guide that philosophy of sustainability and that mission, and others can, you know, we gather those who, you know, share that philosophy and can help us as we grow older, and like less in touch with the cool stuff or whatever, or, you know, like the people who come in with all with, you know, like new passions and excitement and directions and stuff, like they can have an effect and they can guide where this goes and actually feel ownership. And so like we can one day just fade away the principles and still right. have a, well, that's the dream.
And Briburn can continue and Briburn grow can beyond you.
And, right. Yeah. And that's the, that was the idea, but I don't know if I even answered the original question.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, you're also, and I didn't mention this in your bio, but you're also a co-author of Pretty Good House book.
Yes. So. Yeah. In fact, that's the thing that we're, you know, we're pushing these days, the authors and, you know, not necessarily for book sales, because I mean, honestly, when we did this book, we weren't sure how popular it would be. And, you know, like no one's planning to retire from this book. No one's, you know, it's not a, that's not why we did it.
After this podcast, you never know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna
sell millions of these things.
I get the Entree Architect bump in sales. It's gonna be great.
You heard it, people. Go buy the book.
Go get it at Amazon. Leave a 5-star review if you like it. If you don't, then don't leave anything. But
do the 5-star review. It's good.
Yeah, but I think this book was, you know, like the whole idea is. In fact, this is how the book started, where. Dan Colbert. So we had the building science discussion group. You mentioned that in the, you know, I always like to promote that. Steve Constantino of Performance Building Supply here in Portland, Maine. He and Dan Colbert, my fellow co-author and builder, you know, they'd get together, think about a topic, usually like minutes before the session started or whatever. And basically builders, architects, engineers, whoever, building enthusiasts would just show up at Steve's store. We'd have beers. Sometimes there's snacks. Some, if in summertime, someone would get the grill out or whatever. And we pick a topic and argue about it and debate it. And, you know, like, you know, cathedral ceilings, you know, vent or don't vent, or how's the best way to do that? And you have all these Yankee builders who are stubborn as hell, say, oh, this is how you do it. You always do it this way. And everyone knows it. And then, you know, so, and it was great. You know, it's a great forum. And, anyway, so Dan's usually the moderator, and I'm like his understudy when he can't make it. Or that was the shtick. Anyway, and so we were doing he was like, I think he was doing his first passive house, or maybe it was a LEED Gold or Platinum house or something like that. And anyway, he was, I'm putting words in his mouth, but who cares?
He's not here.
He's not here to defend himself. So anyway, I think he was very frustrated about, you know, these rating systems and how he's been, you know, he's doing these sustainable houses and he's just going through all this work just to prove that he's doing it right. And I think it exasperated, you know, he said, I just want to do a pretty good house. We just want to do a pretty good house. And what does that look like? And so we had this great conversation about what that looks like. And it was like, it was heated about, you know, like how much do you insulate? Because this was the moment when, you know, passive house was right in the crosshairs of people. They're like, oh, you're putting 16 inches of foam under a slab. It's like, how, you know, to hit your energy goals, at what point do you say I'm being ridiculous about this? And it's like, well, we need to affect the masses, not just one boutique house. Anyway, so Mike Maines, a fellow co-author, blogged about that session and on the greenbuildingadvisor.com, and it kind of blew up. And we had a second session and he blogged about that. And all of a sudden people are like talking about, can't wait for Pretty Good House standards to come out. And this is going to be a great system that we're all going to, I'm looking for. And we're like, whoa, this thing, we hit the zeitgeist on this one. And it was like, it is like a Frankenstein monster getting up from the table and born. And it's like, holy crap, we better figure out what to do. And I can't remember, this is like 10 years ago, whatever, or more. And I think I was the one who was pushing most, like, we need to make this a book and get it out there. And I think Mike, pitched it to Taunton Press, or I can't remember what it was probably Mike. And at the time they were like, no one's into books. They're all into e-books and all into, you know, everything's the future's digital, man.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit and, you know, the phone rings and it's a publisher from Taunton. He's like, hey, you know how we said people aren't interested in books? People are really interested in books now. And this was a really great idea. I don't know why we didn't do it. I'm like, I don't know why you didn't do it either, man. And so basically, you know, the four of us, got together and said, let's write this together, because, you know, the whole concept of Pretty Good House, the cool thing about it is it's sort of consensus born, you know, it's born from, you know, debate amongst all of our peers. And they're all really great people who really know what they're talking about. And we wanted to get a group of people to write this. And so it was Dan Colbert, Mike Maines, Emily Mottram, and myself. And then we got a publisher, you know, who basically wrangled us like cats. And, you know, he's retired. Ours was the last book. He swears it has nothing to do with his retirement, but
you put him out of business.
Peter Chapman, he was really great. But, you know, he did say, you guys are writing with a very similar voice, which is helpful. And of course, you know, I think we did give him a few extra gray hairs having four authors. Essentially we, you know, divided up the chapters and amongst us, and all took the first pass at it, and then all, you know, critiqued each other's work and made sure we're saying the right things here and we're all in agreement on it. And, you know, the editors did their pass and, you know, cut out like 25% of all of our words and, you know, made it a much more readable tome. And then, of course, Taunton, you know, they've got access to, you know, great publication abilities. And then, then it happened. There you go.
How long did it take from the initial invitation to publish to the point where you had the book in your hand?
From the first invitation, almost 2 years. So it would be like, but when we really got started, about a year and a half would probably be the real answer to that. And you think that, you know, writing stops like a good, you know, 6 months before the book comes out. You know, there's a lot of, you know, actual publishing that happens and editing and whatnot and back and forth that way. So
who's the book written for?
That was the other really hard part about this book, is because we are trying to hit a very broad cross section of readers. Like this book is for, like, for me, like, since this is Entree Architect, like, this is a great book to hand the intern who's starting in the office and say, here, this is, you know, like, it's, we say it's a guide to creating better homes, because that's really what it tries to be a book about everything. But it's also a book where there's nothing new in it. It's just organized and compiled in like almost a textbook way that is very conversational, with a slight bit of humor or whatever. And it's like, here, you can read this. And it's also a good one to like give your excited clients who've come through the door and they're like, you know, I want to learn about all these things. And you could spend tons of time teaching them and talking about it. Or you could say, I want you to have this book here, read this, you know, it's homework, put it under your pillow, absorb it or whatever. And we'll, you know, it's a good primer. It's also a book that I think enthusiastic homeowners or people who are about to build their own house, you know, call a timeout, buy this book, read it. And it's sort of like, helps sort of get your value set, you know, situated. What are the important things to get right? And what is the process through, you know, home building that you should, you know, go through, from, you know, design to, site stuff, getting your team right, you know, the building envelope, and then get into the technical stuff with systems and vapor barriers, the whole thing. And so, like, for some, like, I think for new architects, they're going to get a lot out of this book. I think experienced architects, they'll get a little bit out of it. Or experienced in high performance buildings. Anyone's doing high performance houses and, you know, they'll probably take something from it. There's some good content in there. But I also think someone like, my mom, you know, she'd read it and go, like, yeah, you know, hey, this is good. There's some good stuff in here. And I don't, you know, you can get as deep as you need to get. And that was actually the hardest part about writing this thing, was trying to keep it, you know, so that we're talking to those same people of different experience levels.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by RCAT.com. Can't find the product data that you're looking for? You might be using the wrong search engine. Broad searches result in consumer products, out-of-date information, and websites that hide or don't have the information that you're looking for. If you need specifications, CAD, or BIM, RCAT.com is your search engine. Find and download the up-to-date data that you need fast. RCAT.com is free and requires no registration. So try RCAT today. That's ARCAT.com. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. It's very approachable, right? This concept, right? This topic of sustainable design can get so complicated and so deep and so in the weeds with all the calculations and the details, and just gets overwhelming. And what's fantastic about the Pretty Good House is that it's better than just a regular house, right? You can build code, and code will let you build the best worst house you can build, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And Pretty Good House is saying, okay, well, if you don't want to just build the best worst house you can build, this is a pretty good house. This is going to be better than a typical house. It's not going to be at the top of it's not going to be a passive house or at the extreme, or it's not going to be net zero. But if you want to build a house that is sustainable, it's taking care of the planet, you're looking at your materials and you're looking at every aspect of the house. It's not just systems, but it's everything, right? It's the materials that you build with, the systems that you build with, the methods that you build with. Yeah. It's all in there, and it's really easy to consume. It's easy to understand. It's illustrated, so it's us architects. Yeah. The eye candy's there for you. And so it's very well done. And it's a book that every architect should have on their shelf for reference, for sure.
Oh, well, thanks for saying that, Mark. I mean, I think so, but I'm incredibly biased. So you said it better than I did. Yeah. That's exactly what it's for and who it's for. So,
Is there anything that's happened with you and or your co-hosts since writing the book that's just sort of interesting, that this is sort of a result of being an author? Has there been any sort of experiences that you've dealt with?
There's been a few. Like there's a lot that everything's the same. I walk through the door in the office, no one gives a crap about the book. I'm like, here's a book, you can have it for yourself. And like, thanks, big deal. But
they're keeping you humble.
Yes, exactly.
I don't want you to recognize the rock star that you've become.
Exactly. Yeah. Once this ego is already just brimming, it's ready to just overflow. But no, we've gotten a lot of feedback from a lot of people who have, they'll visit prettygoodhouse.org and then they'll thank us for writing this book. And they're like, oh my God, I learned so much. Or I'm so glad I read, this chapter about, air sealing before I built my house. I had no idea it was so important or whatever. There's so many pieces and parts that, different people will take it, from different angles. But we've also heard from different universities or teaching institutions that are like, this is a textbook. We might start adjusting a course. Can we use your book? And so we're talking about that. Penn State is looking at it. There's a Canadian university looking at a couple of community schools, community colleges that are starting to pick it up as maybe a textbook. And
that's very exciting.
It is very exciting. And the authors, we've each done different presentations in different locations. Like I just got back from South Bend, Indiana, where they're trying to have sustainable housing development. They're trying to push for some sustainable housing development and sustainable communities. And man, what a great group of people in South Bend pushing that and doing the work that they're doing there, and really diving into their community and creating neighborhoods based on a community, not from the outside in, but from the inside out. And they contacted us because this has an element of sustainability to it. This is, you can't just do affordable housing and and a lot of it's renovations and that sort of thing. But if you do, affordable housing, a lot of people think affordable housing is, the cheapest house you can make for someone to get into, like a roof over your head, heat and all that stuff. But if it is a huge burden, if it's the cheapest house and worst house you can build, then it's also the hardest house to maintain and with the biggest burden. And you just gave, if you're in an affordable housing entity and you give, that kind of house to a person who's struggling, then they're never going to get ahead. But if you give them a house that with, tiny energy bills and that's very comfortable and easy and durable to, easy to maintain and durable, then, you just help them out even more. And usually these entities that are creating this type of work, these projects, this type of housing, they have the means to do so. And do it for them, it's not much of a stretch to go that, just make a pretty good house instead of a low income house. I'm using air quotes. You can see me, Mark, but you can't. But I went on a tangent there, I realized. But I
think that that what you just said calls for the Pretty Good Development book as a volume 2.
Gosh.
that talks about how you can build pretty good developments.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an exclusive, an Entree Architect exclusive. But
excellent, I love it.
I think Pretty Good Renovations is being heavily talked about.
And interesting.
Very well be the next sequel book. We're getting a lot of pressure from Taunton and others to do that, because you read the book, that we give some lip service to renovation work, but renovations, every project is so different and unique, and there's a lot to think about there, and there's a lot that they all have in common. But we thought, the basic principles of everything are much better explained with, new construction. So it's a good sequel book. And
yeah, I think Pretty Good Renovations would have a huge demand. I think there are a lot of renovation architects out there that would love some sort of book like that, that sort of gives us a guide to how to do it better. That the Pretty Good House has a lot of information for that. So renovation architects should be grabbing that book too, but to have a book that's very specific to renovations would be great. I'd buy that.
Oh, great. Thanks, Mark. I'll put you down. Sale number one. We'll send it to you.
You signed
and everything.
That sounds good to me. All right. Well, before we wrap up, I'd love to have your answer to my question that I ask my guests.
Sure.
What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Well, I should have known this was coming, Mark. I should have been more prepared for the question. But if I had to answer that, I'm going to kind of answer with what I'm struggling with now, or what I'm realizing now. The phrase "know thyself."
Yeah.
It is immensely important. Like when you're starting your own business, everything is a struggle, and you're like in the trenches, and you don't have time to really put focus on yourself in terms of what am I really good at and what am I really bad at, and where do I need everything, what kind of infill do I need, from what help do I need, and so it's like what advice do I really need to seek in different aspects of myself, because I'm in a way captain of the ship, or in my case co-captain of the ship. And it's like you realize that a lot of flaws in project management, flaws in company management are the fact that I'm focused on other things that I'm more passionate about, or that that I like doing. And so I tend not to do the things that I don't like doing. But, hey, if you're running your own business, you have to do all these things. Like I went to college, studying architecture, not business. And there's some advice. Hey, go take a business class.
Join Entree Architect. That's what we're here for.
Join Entree Architect and learn about the business side of architecture. But for me, I think the advice and something I'm learning about is trying to figure out how do I best fit into to my own office? How do I navigate that? And so that's a little bit of sit down and meditate and be very honest.
That's very good advice. It's some self-awareness, some self-analysis, and see where you fit best, right? Because
Yeah.
The way we succeed is when we focus on the things that we're strong at, the things that we're really good at, and finding other ways to accomplish the many things that need to be done, but we may not be the right people for. And when we first start, like you said, we just do it all.
Yeah.
And 10 years later, you can still just be doing it all. And you could be in a position where you don't have to do it all anymore. And you can focus on the thing that you're really good at and have somebody else do the things that you're not so good at and really take it to the next level by doing that.
Yeah. And a lot of it, I think, comes down to passion. It's like, because what I think is universal is like, if you're passionate about something, you're good at that thing. And I think that's any person is like that. It's like, what are you most passionate about? Well, it turns out you're really good at that thing. It's like, if you're passionate about bookkeeping, oh my God, you should be bookkeeping in this place. I don't know those people, but you know what I mean? It's like,
they're
out there. Yeah. There are numbersy people. There are, you know, so it's, you know, who's passionate about scheduling projects and lining them up like an air traffic controller in the pipeline of things. Where is that person? You know who that's not? That's not me. I like designing buildings. So like learning this stuff about yourself late in the game is not helpful. Learning it about yourself early is really important.
Yeah.
That's my bit of advice.
Good advice. His name is Chris Briley. The firm is Briburn. You can learn more about Briburn at briburn.com. Got that URL because he picked his name.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's a lot shorter than the potential long double names.
Yeah, that's right.
Briburn. So briburn.com. We'll have links to that on the show notes. The book is Pretty Good House, The Pretty Good House. It's prettygoodhouse.org is the website.
Yeah.
We'll have links to all of that on the show notes. You should go buy that book and read it and give it away and buy lots of them and give them to all your clients. It is a book that is exactly perfect for that. If you're doing residential work, you should buy a whole collection of them and give them away to every client you work with. And I'm not just saying that because Chris is looking at me here. It is exactly what you should do, because I think it will help you do what you do, right? Because it'll educate your clients on how you can best serve them. So Chris, thank you for writing that book, for dedicating yourself to making the world better through architecture rather than harming our world through architecture. I appreciate you going out there and talking about it and writing about it. And I appreciate you for coming by here and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's been a real pleasure and great to be on your show.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, share a link with a friend. That's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands of architects just like you. Please share a rating, write a review, share a link to this episode with a friend. I'd appreciate it. Links to all our sponsors and all the resources we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. It's the network dedicated to architects, engineers, and construction pros. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at Gable Media at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. Go check it out. We have, I think, 13 podcasts over there now. gablemedia.com. And before we wrap up, a special thank you to our partners at Graphisoft for helping our community of architects make the transition to BIM with ArchiCAD software. Go now to graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect and see how Graphisoft is positioning to help make your architecture firm a success. Visit graphisoft.com/us/EntreeArchitect to learn more. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage. Love, learn, and go share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.